Lesson 20, David and Goliath. Yahweh saveth not with sword and spear. Israel had been delivered into the hands of the Philistines because of their iniquities. Judges 13, verse 1. This oppression by the Philistines continued through to the time of Saul. From this background emerges David, a faithful youth. The story of David's victory over Goliath would be one of the best-known stories in all the world. Many would, of course, see David's victory as a lucky coincidence, but David said that it was in order that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, 1 Samuel 17, verse 46. Our aim in examining David's victory will be to see how faith overcomes all obstacles. This is the victory that overcometh, even our faith, 1 John 5, verse 4. 1 Samuel 17. The Philistine Challenge, in 1 Samuel 17, verses 1-3. There is a most interesting account of one of the Philistine invasions in 1 Samuel 17. Here we read of the two armies being gathered together on opposite sides of the valley of Elah. The Philistines attacked along the valley, taking possession of several kilometers of territory. Saul replied by gathering his army on the opposite side of the valley, to prevent any further advance by the enemy. Both sides were in a very strong defensive position, secure against attack, but at the same time unable to advance. To do so would mean forsaking their strong position on the side of the valley, descending to the valley floor, and then advancing upwards, completely exposed to the weapons of the enemy. A mental picture of the territory involved can help our understanding of these events. Consult a Bible atlas and note the Valley of Elah, which runs from the hill country of Judah southwest of Jerusalem, westward through the lowlands past Ashdod to the Mediterranean. It provided a direct route for a Philistine invasion right into the heart of Israel. Shoko and Azekah were all in the territory of Judah, verse 1 and Joshua 15, verse 35, but at this time had been taken by the Philistines. Compare to Joshua 15, verse 47. Goliath, the man of flesh, 1 Samuel 17, verses 4-11. Because the armies were in this deadlock, Goliath, the Philistine champion, came forward, issuing his challenge to the warriors of Israel to engage him in single combat. He was an extraordinary sight, around 3 meters tall, almost completely covered in armor of one kind or another. He also had a shield bearer to add the final touch to his defenses. His mighty cry struck terror in the hearts of the men of Saul's army. Day after day he strode forth, bellowing his challenge and scorn across the valley. Note how frequently six and brass are used in the description of Goliath. Both are symbols used of the flesh. And so it appears that God is setting him before us as a type of Gentile might. Saul's stature had shriveled, at least in his view. Now there was a hollow ring to the words of the people spoken to Samuel before Saul was appointed. "Nay, but we will have a king over us, that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." 1 Samuel 8, verses 19 and 20. Where now was the king who stood head and shoulders above his people? In chapter 10, verse 23. Even the mighty among the troops of God, Abner and the rest, felt no urge to take up the challenge. David accepts the challenge. 1 Samuel 17, verses 12-37. Meanwhile, David passed back and forth between his father's flocks at Bethlehem and the camp of Israel, 23 kilometers away. When he arrived with provisions for his brethren, as instructed by his father, in verses 17-18, he heard the boastful challenge of Goliath, of verses 23-25. David was surprised and dismayed that for 40 days no one in Israel had dared to take away this reproach, that the name of Yahweh, the living God, should be defiled in this fashion, verse 26. His fervor was aroused. Without thought for his own person, he sought to do exploits for God. The nature of his words and his marvelous confidence, begotten of faith, soon brought him within the king's knowledge. Meanwhile, his brethren, feeling that David's words were an implied rebuke to themselves, angrily accused him of neglecting his sheep for the glamour of the battle, verse 28. But on hearing of David's words, Saul sent for him, verse 31. David fearlessly volunteered to fight the Philistine champion. Saul looked at what some might have called a precocious youth, but this was no time for empty boasting. The odds were too great. Even so, Saul thought that David had misjudged the situation. What chance had a mere stripling against so formidable a foe? How experienced was he? But it was Saul who had misjudged David's God. Nothing was impossible with him. Twice before, through the power of Yahweh, David had delivered his flock from the ravages of a lion and a bear, and this heathen Philistine was no better than them. Verses 32 to 37. David's one concern was that this man had dared to breathe defiance against the living God of Israel, and this reproach must be wiped out. Faith triumphant over flesh. 1 Samuel 17, verses 38 to 53. Saul put his armor on David. This was a pathetic gesture, obviously meant in good faith, but of what use was the armor? Saul was not willing to wear it and go out to meet the giant. Nor was it any good to David, who excused himself and set out in shepherd's clothes to find Goliath. He hastened down the slope of the valley, chose 5 smooth stones out of the stream, and drew near to the Philistine. The champion could hardly believe his eyes, and poured scorn on the foolish youth who, said he, would make but a poor meal for the beasts of prey. Humanly speaking, David's chances were slender in the extreme, but the weapons of his warfare were not carnal. His trust lay not in the simple sling he had brought, nor on the keenness of his eye, though these would be laid in service before the God of the armies of heaven. He came in the name of the living God. His purpose was that all the earth might know that there is a God in Israel. Verse 46. When Goliath of Gath cursed David by his gods, he sealed his doom. Yahweh would surely move to vindicate his honor, and David knew that he was the vessel chosen to bring this about. With supreme confidence, he said to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." Verse 45. Goliath of Gath was constrained to bestir himself to meet his challenger. David moved like lightning. He chose a stone from his bag, and taking aim, struck the colossus in his partly exposed and vulnerable forehead. He sank like lead. David continued his run, drew out the giant's own sword, and severed his head from his body. The shout from the camp of Israel was one of joy and near incredulity. The Philistines fled in dismay and were sorely routed. Meanwhile, David took the armor from Goliath and brought it to his tent. The monstrous head was eventually buried near Jerusalem, the very site where sin itself would in time be destroyed. By this means, God brought David into prominence before the people and Saul, verses 55 to 58. He had commenced his public life and was soon to stand in the court of Saul. The mind of David. An understanding of the mind of David at this time can help to gain an insight into a man of faith. The following 2 sections contain some notes on Psalms 8 and 144. The former is a psalm of victory to commemorate his great deliverance, and the latter is the prayer for deliverance he uttered as he went to meet Goliath. The psalms help us to grasp the mind of David as he prepared to meet the mighty colossus of flesh. There is no doubt that Yahweh's judgment was right when he selected David as Saul's successor to the throne of Israel. Part A, David's Prayer for Deliverance, Psalm 144. In the Septuagint version, this psalm carries the heading, A Psalm of David Concerning Goliath. It reveals David's attitude to the incident when later he penned the words of the psalm. Psalm 144, verses 1 to 4, show us David's trust in Yahweh, for despite man's insignificance, he will deliver him. Verses 5 to 8 show David appeals for God's help in view of the blasphemy of the uncircumcised. In verses 9 to 11, David promises to give Yahweh praise and glory following deliverance. And in verses 12 to 15, the blessings which will flow on to Israel as a result of deliverance from God. Part B, David's Song of Victory, Psalm 8. Words printed in our Bibles as the heading of Psalm 9 form really the footnote or subscription of Psalm 8. This reads, "To the chief musician upon Muthlaban," and the word Muthlaban means the death of the champion. Thus, Psalm 8 celebrates the death of Goliath and gives praise to the true victor. In verse 1 of Psalm 8, it extols the majesty of the Creator, the Lord of heaven and earth. Verse 2 describes how Yahweh has gained victory over the enemy through a mere stripling. See 1 Samuel 17, verses 42 and 46. In verses 3 and 4 of Psalm 8, they extol the majesty of God and his condescension in his regard for his people. Verses 5 to 8 recall God's purpose in the creation of man to give him dominion over all things despite his low estate. See Genesis 1, verse 20. Verse 9 repeats verse 1 and declares the universality of God's name and dominion. This was David's purpose in destroying Goliath. 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 to 47. There is also a prophetic element in this psalm, which justifies our viewing this incident as typical of the coming conflict when Christ will destroy the power of the flesh in preparation for the establishment of his kingdom. In Hebrews chapter 2, verses 6 to 8, Paul quotes Psalm 8, verses 4 to 6, and applies the words of David to the worldwide dominion which Christ will exercise when he returns and fulfills the divine purpose of man having dominion over the earth. Genesis 1, verse 26. David, a type of Christ. Such passages show us that David's experiences are a type of those of his greater son. His conflict with Goliath typifies Christ's conflict with the power of flesh, symbolized in Nebuchadnezzar's image of man, in Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 to 33. Like Goliath, the image was toppled by a little stone, the Son of God. When this really happens at Christ's return, the result will be the destruction of the power of man, verses 35 and 44. God alone shall be exalted in that day. See Ezekiel chapter 39, verses 17 to 22, and 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 to 47. If we are wise now, we will have our place with Christ in that day. See Psalm 149, verses 6 to 9. The faith of David must be followed by us today. No battle is too difficult for God. Our faith must be placed in the captain of our salvation, Hebrews 2 verse 10, in whom we can be assured of success. Christ as the chief shepherd, 1 Peter 5 verse 4 and John 10 verse 11, can protect and deliver us from every foe. Lessons for us. The contest between David and Goliath was not just a fight between two men or two armies, but it was a challenge of the living God of Israel by the idols of the Philistines. The failure of Saul to respond to Goliath's challenge was a failure of faith and of his responsibility to lead his people. David's clarity of faith is an inspiration to disciples of all ages. If God be for us, who can be against us? Romans 8, verse 31. Goliath epitomizes the world with all its lusts, ungodliness, and blasphemy. We look to the time when the kingdoms of men will be toppled by the Son of God and blown away like chaff on the threshing floor. Reference Library. The Ways of Providence by Robert Roberts, Chapter 15. Nazareth Revisited by Robert Roberts, pages 417 to 420. Letter to the Hebrews by John Carter, pages 26 to 28. The Story of the Bible by H.P. Mansfield, volume 3, number 8 and 9. Nelson's Bible Atlas, maps 13 and 15. The Oxford Bible Atlas, pages 60 to 63. The Historical Geography of the Holy Land by George Adam Smith, 1966 edition, pages 160 to 162. The Man David by Harry Tennant, pages 24 to 32.